One of the first things Donald Trump said after he was running for president was that he'd build a wall on the border with Mexico. As president, he has continued to push ahead with plans for the wall, while Congress appears to be slow walking the funding for it. Many people and organizations have spoken out against the wall for a broad variety of reasons. The Center for Biological Diversity's reason is that the wall would be a huge barrier to the movement of animals, some of them sensitive species, low in number. CBD has gone to court in an effort to block the wall. Brian Segee is a senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
So let's talk about the lawsuits first. How many have been filed against the wall and its building plans by CBD?
We have two primary lawsuits pending right now. The first pertains to wall construction in California, and the second pertains to wall construction in New Mexico. We filed the San Diego lawsuit early last year, and that shortly after Trump was elected and issued his executive order. And that lawsuit focused on the prototypes, which was the dog and pony show with his great concrete monoliths that were built down there at the border. But it also pertained to replacement of wall in a couple of different sections of San Diego.
You mean existing wall?
Of existing wall that they are upgrading and building larger and building more formidably.
So are you trying to you want to make sure that the wall is passable or in some way accessible? What is it you're trying to do?
Well, the border wall construction, there is some confusion around Trump's wall because there's different types of border barriers that are constructed. But regardless of what it's called, whether it's a bollard wall or a concrete wall, or any of the different variations, they are all of them disastrous for wildlife because they do not allow movement of that wildlife along the southern border. A lot of folks in our country sort of picture the borderlands region as, and this is fostered by the way Trump and other politicians talk about the area, but in the public's eye, it's seen as sort of a desolate wasteland, often almost depicted as a war zone, and that could not be farther from the truth. The 2,000-mile-long southern border from San Diego to Brownsville has an incredible diversity, not only of wildlife species, but of human communities. Part of the reason for this incredible diversity is because the southern border is at the intersection of the tropical and temperate regions. It's got a mix of eastern and western ecosystems, and so that results in a lot of species that don't occur anywhere else in the country that reach the northern extent of their range along the southern borderlands. That pertains to both species great, like jaguars, ocelots, Mexican gray wolves, peninsular bighorn sheep, but also small, like Kino checker spot butterfly, cactus ferruginous pygmy owl. These species have populations on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. They don't recognize our political boundaries. They depend on movement between populations to have populations on both sides of the border persist, and a border wall blocks that off. And that's true for even some of the flying creatures that I mentioned, because there's butterfly species and bird species that don't necessarily fly that high. The wall is being the replacement wall that I mentioned in San Diego. It's currently the older walls are 12 feet high, and they're replacing those with walls from anywhere from 18 to 30 feet high. And, so that's a nutshell of the wildlife impacts of the border wall.
I hadn't thought about the fact that this is a region itself that is unique in the meeting of two larger regions. So that would seem to indicate, as the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument does in our part of the world, that when you get regions meet, you get creatures that live only in those regions.
That's right, and I'm glad you mentioned the National Monument, because that's also the diversity and the importance of the environmental resources on the southern border are also reflected in the land management designations. And there are a large number of federal lands, protected federal lands, national monuments, national parks, places like Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument, Cabeza Prieta National Wildlife Refuge, the refuges in South Texas, and there's also a lot of local, state, and even private protected lands along the border. And so that fabric, that tapestry of federal protected lands reflects the region's extraordinary diversity and value.
The wall we're talking about here is the border wall on the Jefferson Exchange, proposed by President Donald Trump and still being argued over in Congress and elsewhere. Brian Segui is a senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, lead attorney on the border wall lawsuit. There are two lawsuits, he mentioned, two primary lawsuits against wall construction, reconstruction, actually, in California, the San Diego area, and in New Mexico. We'll get to the New Mexico part in just a moment. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Your thoughts on the construction of the wall and its effect specifically on wildlife. Welcome here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we haven't talked about the New Mexico lawsuit. What does that deal with specifically, Brian?
That is actually new border wall construction. It's in the vicinity of Las Cruces, which is in south central New Mexico. And in that area, there was a Mexican gray wolf that was tracked recently. It has a collar on it. It came from Mexico. It wandered around the New Mexico region for a little bit, and then it headed on back to Mexico. That's just an example of the species that are at risk. But one thing I wanted to point out about both of these lawsuits is that we're not yet getting to the substance, the underlying concerns of our lawsuit, compliance with environmental laws, things like the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, because under a 2005 law called the Real ID Act, Congress vested the Department of Homeland Security Secretary with the authority to waive laws that would otherwise apply to border wall construction. And this is not only environmental laws, but historic preservation, religious freedom laws, anything that could potentially apply to the border wall.
So if the Homeland Security Secretary deems that something is getting in the way of Homeland Security, those laws go off to the side by the interpretation of this one person.
That's correct. And the during the George W. Bush administration, again, this law was passed in 2005, the Bush administration used this authority very aggressively. It issued 5 waivers that cover more than 600 miles of the border. That's about a third of the southern border. In total, it waived more than 35 laws, including laws that I have already mentioned, like Endangered Species Act or NEPA. And the vast majority of existing border fencing, and that's another thing that I think a lot of people don't realize, is that there are hundreds of miles of existing fencing or other barriers already on the southern border. They were constructed under these waivers. Legal challenges about a decade ago were unsuccessful, and now the Trump administration has revived this authority. And so both our San Diego lawsuit and our New Mexico lawsuit were still arguing about the waivers, because in our lawsuits we have alleged that the waivers, the authority is not available to the DHS secretary, and if it is available, then it's unconstitutional. And our primary constitutional argument is based on separation of powers principles, and
that you're giving somebody the executive branch essentially congressional authority.
Correct.
We are talking
Go ahead.
Let me just remind our audience, we're talking to Brian Segui from the Center for Biological Diversity about the border wall and the proposals to build one on the border with Mexico. The Center for Biological Diversity opposes this, including in court, because of concerns about what it'll do to endangered species. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Let's put the legal stuff aside for just a moment, Brian, and just talk about physics. I mean, as you mentioned, the border region is not this pool table flat area with this dry desert and you can just put the wall in the middle of it. There are mountains, there are streams, there is the Rio Grande. I mean, I have to believe that there are some places like in the middle of the Rio Grande where a wall is nearly impossible to locate short of pile driving the riverbed.
That's right. What Trump recently called the vicious river. I don't know if he had ever looked at a map before, but there are significant geographic constraints. And really a lot of, as I was mentioning earlier about the existing wall, a lot of the low-hanging fruit or the easy places for the government to build these walls have already occurred. And so there are the physical obstacles, but there are also the administration is focusing its energies. I haven't mentioned Texas yet, but to the extent that Congress has funded border wall construction, and it has, include with Democratic votes, given money twice already to Trump, not as much as he would like, but has already directed money. That money will focus on border wall construction in southern Texas. And there, the obstacle is a bit different because unlike the other three border states, California, Arizona, and New Mexico, the Texas border is predominantly private lands. And so it makes it more difficult for the government. It's somewhat easier for the government when federal lands are involved for it to come in and build barriers and sort of, you know, roll Department of the Interior or other federal officials that may be opposed. Dealing with Texas private land, it becomes a lot more complicated. And so there are hundreds of eminent domain law suits and negotiations that would need to occur before construction can go forward in South Texas. And those communities are strongly opposed.
We have a call here dropped off by Lawrence and Eugene who talks specifically about Texas. He points out the presence of Big Bend National Park, and he says earth-moving equipment nearby could do a lot of damage to it. I mean, are you concerned about, I mean, I have to believe you're concerned about the land, at least up to the point of it being habitat. So there are some sensitive lands there too, I would think.
Absolutely. And with the case of Big Bend, I think that's a good example of it's probably just physically impossible to build a wall because the river is going through deep canyons in that region. In other areas further south in Texas, there are not canyons, but the river it naturally meanders, and so it moves back and forth across a large area. That has resulted in DHS is and this has already occurred, but the border walls that are built in South Texas are built north of the floodplain, and in some cases that can result in the border wall being built a mile or two from the border. And what that means is we're effectively giving that land to Mexico because the area behind the wall that's still on U.S. territory is essentially a no man's land or is a heavily militarized zone with DHS presence. And so it's a great irony in all of this that the border wall can actually result in basically us giving away U.S. land.
So yeah, instead of Mexico paying for the wall, we're giving Mexico land,
right?
A little bit anyway. Let's get to the security question because I'm sure somebody's got that running through their mind. People thinking, well, this is not the first wave of this. I mean, there are concerns about security. People want to make sure that the border is secure and that we don't have people coming into the country who don't have permission to come into the country. And where does the Center for Biological Diversity come down on that part of the question?
That's right. And the question's been debated for decades. The San Diego border wall, which is actually a triple-layer wall in some areas, it was where border wall construction first began. It's often held up as a model of how border wall construction has supposedly benefited national security. But just in the last year, and this was detailed in a recent New York Times article, a look at the statistics shows that the San Diego region of the Border Patrol is still has the largest concentrations of drugs passing through the border and other smuggling, and that's because most of what we're trying to stop is not moving through these dangerous, hot, desolate areas of the border, but is moving through the ports of entry. And so our emphasis should be on those ports, as opposed to constructing ineffective, really largely symbolic, but incredibly destructive border walls in more remote areas.
So, Brian, do some of the barriers that exist in areas where there would be wildlife traffic, are they built in such a way as to accommodate the wildlife? I mean, we're not talking anything like the wildlife passovers on highways in Alaska here, are we?
No, there's nothing like that, and that's something that's been lost by the past waivers, because the existing border walls were built without the benefit of compliance with environmental laws. Laws like the Endangered Species Act and NEPA are often almost somewhat of a negotiations, not a perfect word, but those processes result in improvements to projects or alternatives to proposed projects that can mitigate or avoid environmental impacts that it would otherwise occur. That is in large part their objective, and so we didn't have that in this case. So that said, we're very skeptical that there's any way you can build an environmentally friendly border wall.
Mostly because it seems like anything that would let an animal the size of a jaguar through would also let a person through.
That's right. And there's been discussions of like things like almost like little cat doors in the border wall.
Really?
But yeah, that came up about a decade ago, but those did not come to pass and would very likely not be effective in the first place.
So have there been hearings yet on either of these two major lawsuits you talked about for San Diego or New Mexico?
The San Diego lawsuit, we had a hearing at the district court, and we unfortunately did not prevail there. We have appealed part of the lawsuit. We've appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. We had a hearing on that last week, and so the decision is pending. And then we're also going to be pursuing a petition for writ of certiorari before the Supreme Court to pursue the constitutional issues.
Constitutional issues being the Homeland Security Secretary's power under the Real ID Act of 2005?
Correct. Those the separation of powers arguments.
All right. Yeah. When I look at the powers under the Real ID Act, it seems like it's almost the God Squad power that's written into the Endangered Species Act.
That's right, except it applies to any law that could otherwise apply to border wall construction. It's been called the broadest waiver of laws in U.S. history.
Well, all right, a lot to consider when we talk about the environmental impacts of the proposed border wall on the Mexican border. Brian Segui is a senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
A pleasure.